June 2010 marked the official birthday of the Vatican's Council for the Promotion of Christian Unity, set up half a century ago by Pope John XXIII in the lead-up to the Second Vatican Council. That great meeting of the worldwide church would literally revolutionize the way Catholics related to Christians from other churches and communities. No longer would Catholics be warned to stay away from people of other denominations, but rather they would be encouraged to pray with them, to discern the Spirit at work, and to find ways of working together on all kinds of common concerns. But just how did that extraordinary change of attitude come about? Why did church leaders suddenly see it was time to put aside centuries of division and bitter conflict and to try and answer Christ's own prayer on the eve of the crucifixion, that they may be one?
The world today needs the common witness of Christians. The fact that they are divided hinders the work of the church, and I do hope that we could all be trustful that the Holy Spirit, which has given us so much grace to walk the path of ecumenical closeness, in the last 50 years, we'll continue to do this.
Bishop Brian Farrell is Secretary of the Pontifical Council for Promoting Christian Unity. During the recent Edinburgh Conference on Unity and Mission, I sat down with him to find out more about the founding of his council and his hopes for the ecumenical movement today.
It's interesting, we just celebrated the 100th anniversary of Edinburgh 1910, which symbolically is taken as the beginning of the modern ecumenical movement. And during the conference itself, we remembered the foundation of the Secretariat for Promoting Christian Unity, which was set up in 1960 by Pope John XXIII in order to bring into the discussions of the Council his concern for the unity of Christians. How it happened, it's a beautiful story of the Pope wanting to bring observers from the other Christian churches, the Orthodox and the Protestant churches, to the Council, and having a need for a group of people that would commit themselves to visiting these churches and inviting them to send observers. This was the beginning of the Secretariat. Later, the Secretariat, the beginning of the Council, took on a more formal structure and became instrumental in promoting the various questions that were particularly important to Pope John XXIII and to Cardinal Bea, the first president of the Secretariat, such as Christian unity, freedom of conscience, the question of the relations of the Catholic Church to the world Jewish community. These themes were deeply and at length debated during the Council, and as I have often said, one of the great untold stories is how the Secretariat, during the 4 years of the Council, educated the bishops in the particular issues and questions that were being debated.
It is an extraordinary achievement, isn't it? Because, as you said, most of these bishops had been educated in an exclusivist Catholic theology. How do you think this great turnaround was made possible? Was it the Pope himself?
Well, of course, the ferment was already in the liturgical, biblical, theological renewal of the first part of the 20th century. But it all came together, if you wish, in the discussions of the Council. The spark being for this new enkindling of Catholic theology, the spark being the particular emphasis given by Pope John XXIII to the question of a renewal of the church, bringing it into dialogue with the questions of the day, and his insistence on the question of Christian unity, which his experience of living in Eastern Europe had undoubtedly stamped on his soul.
And so he was able in this way to bring so many other bishops on board that it really pushed the work of the council forward, didn't it?
Well, the secretariat at that time, as it was called then, worked very hard during the period of the council and even in the months between the various sessions, organizing study groups, organizing symposia, preparing documents to send to the council for discussion. During the sessions of the council, not only were they in constant contact with the observers from all the other churches, meeting with them at least once a week to discuss how the council was going forward, to bring up the questions that were of interest to the other churches, but also doing a kind of educational effort with the rest of the Catholic bishops so that they would understand the deeper theological questions behind the documents being discussed.
There were those at that time who were very opposed, though, weren't they, to this kind of change?
Well, to move a whole world episcopate from the kind of ecclesiology by which Christians were not visibly members of the Catholic Church were simply considered to be outside the Church, to the point where we have a marvelous document which deserves to be read again and again, Unitatis Redintegratio, a document which recognizes that in all of these communities, and not just in the individuals who are baptized, but in all of these communities, the Holy Spirit works to build up the Church of Christ, and that the work of sanctification and mission is carried out through them.
The ecumenical movement, of course, has been going on for the past five decades, huge changes, and yet it's worked in some places much better than others. What do you think has been the determining factor in really pushing this movement ahead over the past half century?
Well, of course, each part of the world is different. Each country is different from the context. If there are no members or very few members of other churches, and we have a huge majority of Catholics, the sense of need and urgency is perhaps less evident. If, on the other hand, Catholics are a minority, of course they're used to living in that situation, and ecumenism, in other words, relations between churches, are on the menu every day. Other factors, of course, are very important, such as the level of personal commitment on the part of the bishops. This is very important, that they understand that the ecumenical commitment, as all of the popes since John the 23rd have constantly repeated and shown in their teaching and in their pastoral activity, is a priority for the Church. The Council showed us that the division among Christians is not just a scandal. We shouldn't be divided according to the will of Christ, but that it harms the great task of preaching the gospel to the world. The Lord prayed for the unity of his disciples so that the world might believe. And it is clear that the ecumenical movement was founded on this principle, that as long as we are divided, we will not be able to carry out this command that the Lord gave us, to preach the gospel.
The ecumenical work began with the post-Reformation churches, the Anglican, the Lutheran, the Reformed churches. It's now broadened out to include the much newer Pentecostal, evangelical churches and movements. How has this changed the work that started 50 years ago?
Yeah, I would just like to say that there has never been a time when the question of unity was not important to the Church. And if you go back, we have the councils that tried to restore unity between East and West and so forth. But certainly after the Reformation, the question became much more present and pressing. With the churches of the Reformation period, there has been a substantial dialogue that has been going on now for 40 years, and the results are significant. We have not been able to solve all the questions, all the controversies of the 16th century, but great headway has been made. Now we are also in dialogue with these churches which have grown up during the 20th century under the influence of this new wave of what we might call Protestant communities, which are substantially connected with the experience of the Holy Spirit and a kind of return to the charisms and signs of the presence of the Holy Spirit that we read about, for example, in the Acts of the Apostles. These today are expanding communities. They constitute a large part of the Christian world. We have been in dialogue with some of these groups for decades, more recently with others. But because of a lack of ecclesial structures and an ecclesiology that would give them more structure, it is very difficult to find the people who would actually represent this type of Christianity.
Most of these, or many of these groups, were represented at the Edinburgh Conference at the beginning of June. What do you think, if you had to summarise the real fruits, the results of that conference? Yes.
Well, for the last 15 years, there has been great interest in the ecumenical world to try to bring the Pentecostal charismatic churches into the ecumenical dialogue. In general, they have been reluctant to do that because of their theological outlook on other Christians. But there is a process called the Global Christian Forum, which has offered them the opportunity to take part in meetings with others, with the Protestant churches of the World Council of Churches and with the Catholic Church, which has been present and works closely with the World Council of Churches, although we are not members. But this recent event in Edinburgh was certainly a step forward insofar as the Pentecostal and charismatic churches felt not just invited, but felt that they had a right to be there, and they took part in a full sense in the activities of this great conference.
So we hope that this will lead on to other significant developments, perhaps.
Well, of course, we're looking at a long journey into the future because the differences in ecclesiology especially, although on fundamental issues we may have greater similarity in questions of Trinitarian doctrine or questions of Christology and the theology of the Holy Spirit, we may agree on many things, we still have to learn from each other who we are, what we stand for, what are the issues that need to be discussed so that we can know each other better and maybe journey together towards greater collaboration and closeness. It's not possible to think that in any short term we will reach any kind of unity. That's not the immediate goal of our conversations with these communities.
But you're hopeful as you look forward to the next half century?
Of course, yes. If you look back 50 years, this council has seen extraordinary changes, progress in our relations with the other churches. I make a point of returning to the great encyclical letter of Pope John Paul II on ecumenism, Autunum Sint, in which he says that perhaps the most significant result of this new relationship is what he calls brotherhood rediscovered. In other words, we are no longer fighting each other. We are no longer in rivalry. We are trying to respond to the will of Christ that we should be one.
Thanks there to Bishop Brian Farrell, Secretary of the Pontifical Council for the Promotion of Christian Unity. Thank you.